The podcast you are about to listen to is haunted, and by haunted, I mean that some mysterious feedback occurs at times in which the interviewers and the authors have no idea why they happened. However, because of the spooky nature of some of Victoria Schwab's books, we decided to leave them in for effect. Thank you, and enjoy the show.
Welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
So, welcome to Turn the Page podcast. I am your host, Megan.
This is Jessica, Community Engagement Specialist.
And we are so excited because we have the New York Times number one bestselling author, V.E. Schwab, on our podcast today. And V.E. has written The Invisible Life of Addie LaRue, which has been on the New York Times bestsellers list, has had many accolades. She's the author of the Shades of Magic series, the Villain series. She's written children's series, The City of Bones. So we are so excited to have you here today. Welcome.
Thank you so much for
having me. I thought we could get started talking a little bit about your book, Addie LaRue, The Invisible Life of Addie LaRue. And just a synopsis, this young woman at a crossroads in 18th century France has a decision she has to make. And she wanders into the woods and she meets a figure called the Stranger. And she makes a decision that changes the course of her whole future. And I had a question about that book for you because I thought, number one, it was wonderful. I couldn't put it down. I actually just reread it recently. So I thought Addie LaRue was such an amazing character and you brought her to life so beautifully. Was there an inspiration point for you for this book on how you decided to create that character and what was your whole process with that?
Yeah, so does anyone else hear that, like, okay, it stopped now. All right, yeah. There we go.
I think part of me is like, should I edit that out? And then the rest of me is like, no, that's atmosphere.
It's very ominous.
I apologize for our listeners, but podcast is now haunted.
Exactly. As we go into the winter holidays. No, so I always think about my stories as a meal. And so to that end, I think about the ingredients that go into that meal, the kind of initial inspirations for it. And for Addie LaRue, it was several fairly potent ingredients that I had to find a way to work together. One was a desire to tell a Faustian bargain story, but the vast majority of Faustian bargains or immortality tales revolve around men. And these men live forever, whether they're vampires or other forms of immortals or deals with the devil, they live forever. They see everything there is to see, go everywhere there is to go, eat everything there is to eat, screw everyone there is to screw, and they get very bored because they have this incredible autonomy. And I just thought a woman would never move through the world in this way. Like, there's just not a same level of historical agency. And so part of it was a curiosity about how a Faustian bargain would even work when you gender swap it. Another element was that I wanted to do an inverted Peter Pan, you know, and I, at the same time, was watching, my grandmother had dementia for a decade before she passed. And so as sad as it was to see her forgetting herself, it was so much harder to watch my mother be forgotten by her. And I think when you also look at the end of Peter Pan, he's sitting on the rock and he's already forgetting the story that's happened. But I think there's almost an innocence in that. And there's such a sadness into being the person that's forgotten. And so I wanted to look at those ideas. And I also wanted to look at the idea of the creative muse. I remember reading, I believe it was Elizabeth Gilbert writing in Big Magic about Anne Patchett. And about how Elizabeth Gilbert had a story idea, an incredibly specific story idea about the Suez Canal, I think, or the Panama Canal. And she lost interest in it. And within like a week of her losing interest in the story, Anne Patchett began writing it. And it was this idea of the transference of inspiration and the creative muses. And so I thought it would be a really interesting way to look at Addie LaRue's narrative. She's cursed. She's given the gift to live forever and cursed to be forgotten by everyone she meets. And what she discovers over the course of her life is that ideas are wilder than memories. And so she can not leave her own mark, but she can influence other people and other forms of art and be interpreted. And so those were kind of the ingredients at the core of the story.
It's such a fascinating work. And I was just drawn to all the different snippets of historical, you know, different events that happened in time. Did you find like there was something that you didn't know about that was something of interest from researching for this book?
Well, it's really interesting. I wanted very carefully for it not to feel like a Forrest Gump style story where she's interacting with politics and history. I wanted to keep her in art. And so there's a little bit of a tricky balance that happens throughout the work between the real and the fictional. And I just did an event with Taylor Jenkins Reid, and she put it so well, which is that she achieves kind of historicity by putting fictional characters in close proximity to real ones. So instead of writing about real people, you put your fictional characters in the same room as the real people. And so things like the French salons of the 1750s, that's something that I worked very hard to do, which was I didn't want to have Addie having an affair with any of the actual historical figures in that room. So what I did was invent a new historical figure to stand alongside them, and they almost achieve veracity through that proximity. And so over the course of Addie LaRue, this happens with both figures in history and places in New York and in Paris specifically, where there's a kind of very careful fusion that's happening so that you as the reader shouldn't be able to tell, unless you know the people already, like Frank Sinatra or Beethoven, you shouldn't be able to tell if a place that she's going is real or made up. Like in New York City, there would be the laundromat, which is a very real kind of underground speakeasy arcade, or the fourth rail, which is a not real club. And the same thing is with historical figures and fictional figures that she meets throughout history, where they kind of stand side by side.
I'm so excited to listen to you talk about this. And I love metaphor. When you talk about stories as a meal, first of all, I love food too. And I love stories. And it's just, for lack of a less, I don't know, cliche phrase, it's delicious listening to you talk about
it. Thank you.
I'm a huge fan of Shades of Magic. And the first book was brought to me as a gift after I just gave birth to my kids, and they're twins, so it was two at once. And you know, like there's a lot of tedium in that time period, and I just recall being in my hospital bed, and somebody was, you know, out at Barnes & Noble, and they said, "I'm at the nearby Barnes & Noble. Is there a book that you want?" And being a librarian, there's always a book that I want. But I just remembered seeing the cover and hearing about Shades of Magic. And I was just like, you know what? Could you grab A Darker Shade of Magic? And I was enchanted. I love stories that involve alternate points, like a point where alternate dimensions, for lack of a better phrase, sort of meet and intertwine. Where did all of that come from?
Well, thank you, first of all. It makes me so glad. I'm working on the fourth book right now, and so that brings me a huge amount of joy. And I think all of my work, I've written 21 books now at this point, and all of them kind of circle a question or I mean, it sounds vague to say a what if, but the important thing about what if is that I write fantasy that is in some way connected to our real world. And so what that means is when you ask the what if, you're standing in reality when you ask that question, because you're asking, what if this was different? What if this was different? And I do the same with craft. And so with the Shades of Magic series, which is about four alternate versions of London and the character who can move between them, I really wanted to write a portal fantasy, and I really wanted to write multiple places, but I hate maps. When I see a map at the beginning of a fantasy novel, I kind of shut down because I don't feel smart enough. Like I never was really good at like reading the fantasy novels where you needed to have a glossary and a map at the beginning. I want the accessibility. I want to be sucked in immediately and just, and figure it out. I always call it the anime school of world building, which is like you're dropped in and you learn the rules as you need them for the story. So I was really turned off by the idea of having to design a world which needed a map. And so I started with a question for myself, which is, what if instead of writing four different places, I wrote the same place four different ways? And that would allow the reader to hold in their mind one blueprint and then design on top of it. And what that allowed me to do, to use another metaphor, of which I have so many, and I will try and resist using all of them. But if you look at the metaphor of a house, I wanted to take the same scaffolding and design different houses on top of it, decorate the rooms differently and have different flourishes. And so I decided to make four versions of the world defined by their relationship to magic. And so one version of the world, Gray London, is our London and has forgotten magic. One version of the world, Red London, has embraced magic and kind of worships it and has a sense of reverence. One London, White London, has tried to subjugate magic and control it. And the last one, Black London, no longer exists because it let magic overtake everything. And so that's really what it started as, is what would the world look like if it had different relationships to power?
So cool. And I just loved everything about it. And I like when you talk about the anime style of world building. I'm definitely an anime fan myself.
Me too. One of the series that I'm reading, and I can't wait to finish it, is the City of Ghosts series, because I'm a children's librarian and that's a book that I recommend to the kids coming in here. And what I love about it is that Scotland is the backdrop of the story. And I love that you open the book and you see the map of Scotland and you see the world that Cassidy Blake and her parents are in. And they're the inspectors. So she gets herself into, you know, a paranormal situation where she befriends this boy who's a ghost. So I thought it was just such an interesting blend of paranormal and I like love learning about Scotland a little bit more, just like getting that atmosphere. So I can't wait to finish that series. I'm a big fan.
Well, thank you. And I will say I am haunting this. And
we're being haunted again.
I know. What I will say is that that's the exception for me when it comes to the map. And the reason, and I love the maps in the front of that. And the reason is, and I think a lot of readers of the City of Ghosts series might not realize this, so it may be one of my favorite facts, is book one is set in Edinburgh, Scotland. Book two is set in Paris, France. Book three is set in New Orleans. And every single place that Cassidy and her parents go to investigate ghost stories, every ghost story that they learn is a real ghost story. So every one of the stories in the books is a local legend tied to a specific place. And you, if you were to come to Edinburgh, you could go to every single place and you could find people that know every one of those ghost stories.
I love Edinburgh so much. I don't need to interrupt you, but you are speaking to my heart because that is one of my favorite places in the world.
This is where I live. Like, okay, this is
I'm 100% jealous. I was unaware of that particular fact.
Yeah. So I love it. And it's honestly what inspired me to write those books is I moved to Edinburgh several times. But the first time I moved here, second time I moved was for grad school. Third time is because I travel so much for work that I want to vacation in my home. And the first time, though, I found utterly fascinating as an American transplant that everyone treats the supernatural with almost a mundane acceptance. Like everyone you meet has a ghost story. And yet everyone you meet wouldn't say that they believe in ghosts. It's just such a part of the fabric of the history of the place. And when I would go places, every single person would be like, oh, I have a ghost story for you. Oh, I have a ghost story for you. Like you would just collect it, this kind of oral tradition of telling the stories of a place. And I started to think about the way that everywhere that has history has hauntings because of that, because of the way the two things go together. And so that really started my love of the City of Ghosts series. And so, yeah, any young readers or adult readers who are reading those should know that every one of the stories that the Blakes are investigating is a very real ghost story.
That is so fascinating, and it's such a great series, so I'd recommend it to anyone. I read it as an adult, and it's just such a fascinating blend of paranormal and, you know, learning about these different amazing places that are so old and that have so much history. They're great reads. And I know that you have, I wanted to ask you about your new book coming out, because you have a new book, Gallant, which I'm so excited to read. And when is it coming out?
Gallant comes out March 1st.
Is there anything you can give us a teaser about, like a little bit about the book?
For you guys to see. So that's the book that comes out March 1st.
That's really pretty.
It is a standalone novel, and I have called it, it's basically The Secret Garden meets Crimson Peak. So it is a very dark fairy tale. It has illustrations in it, which is like my favorite. I'm trying to find them, even though only the two of you will be able to see them. Everyone else will have to wait until they go get the book. But it is, so there's like all these beautiful illustrations throughout it that actually tie into the story. It's a story about a 14-year-old girl named Olivia Pryor, who has spent most of her life at Maryland School for Girls. She is nonverbal, and she has no memory of a family before coming to this orphanage. And the only thing that she has of her mother's is a journal full of her mother's ramblings and these illustrations. And the entries in the journal seem to slide into madness toward the end. And there is a letter to Olivia in the back of the journal, one of the only lucid pieces of writing, that warns her that she will be safe as long as she stays away from Gallant. And she has no idea what Gallant is until she receives a letter from an uncle that she has never met, asking her to come home to Gallant. And she has no choice but to go. And it's about the house that she finds waiting there. The Gallant is the name of the estate, specifically about the garden at the back of the house and the wall at the back of the garden and the door in the wall. And it's about where it leads and the idea of a wall that only has one side, that doesn't surround the property, but stands at the back of it, and that there's something waiting on the other side of it.
That sounds so interesting. I cannot wait to read that. And just
I'm a huge fan of found journal horror-ish type stories. Same. As well. Yeah, does that constitute as a trope of cosmic horror sometimes? You find a journal of somebody and you slightly go mad, or?
I mean, sometimes I love it. For me, it's a continuing theme in a lot of my work is the story within the story.
Yes.
Like, I think it's the oral tale within the written tale, or the written tale within the written tale. I like the idea of nesting narratives in that way. And there is, in fact, the journal is it's snippeted throughout the book, and it is also at the center of the entire novel. The entire journal is there. And so I think it has a slight like puzzling component to it of seeing if you as the reader can piece together this, what's happening.
I love it. It makes me think of, you know, just like there was this video game that I played years and years ago called Eternal Darkness, where you found a journal. I mean, that was the idea. You found this journal, and with the character, you're figuring out what's going on, and the game would warp the crazier the character got. So like at one point, I think like your character had no head, and it just got ridiculous. So there's just so much within Gallant that I can't wait to read already.
Well, thank you. It was the first novel that I wrote after Addie LaRue. And so it was a very scary process, I think, because even though Addie was my 20th published novel, I had the idea for it before my first novel hit shelves. And so it was a lot of time and a lot of buildup and a lot of fear and a lot of hope. And so I'm very, very proud of Gallant.
That sounds amazing. I can't wait to read it either. Like, I love the kind of books that you read up, you know, it's up to your own interpretation, you know, of kind of how the events are unfolding. So I think that'll be a great talking point, like with a lot of my, you know, friends and, you know, fans of your work, and that, you know, there's always another way of looking at things. And I think your books just are such a testament to that. Like, there's so many different ways that you can view the narrative. And then at the end, you're left with like your own interpretation of the work. And that's beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah. Do you have anything right now that you are loving?
Oh my goodness. So I am a huge reader. And I didn't always used to be, but I will say, if anyone is a writer, that the best education that you can give yourself as a writer is as a reader. And so about 5 years ago, I set a goal for myself to read 100 books a year. And this year I'm already at 125, and we're only at, you know, late September. I think that it feeds me. I think that I read for a lot of reasons. I read for work, like I'm reading The Last Graduate, which just came out today because I'll be interviewing Naomi Novik. And I read for pleasure, and I read to learn. And I don't have one genre or one form. I'm constantly reading. I will say, I've just finished an absolutely extraordinary book that I feel is so underrated right now. It's called Build Your House Around My Body by Violet Coopersmith.
Interesting.
Oh, it's brand new and it is exquisite. It's set in Vietnam. It's about two women, like 30 years apart, who both disappear. And it deals with ghosts, and it deals with history and anger and the supernatural. And it's just exquisite. It's so maybe one of the best books that I've read in years. And also a book that I would find myself stopping to savor pieces of prose. So that was really deeply exciting. I have to consult my reading list, because I like giving, like talking about things that I'm loving to read is maybe one of my favorite hobbies. What about you guys? What are you reading right now?
Have you read Life from Uncommon?
Yeah, Stars. I have it. And I haven't read it yet, but I've heard such good things about it.
It's fabulous. And we interviewed Rika, and she's amazing. And it is a really interesting way of looking at a lot of things that are considered, I guess, you know, classical music, and also what art is, and just humanity. And it's got all the things.
Okay, I will definitely have to read it. I read all kinds of things, like People We Meet on Vacation by Emily Henry. I just read Emily Henry's newest one, Book Lovers, which the perk of having agency sisters is that you get to read their books early. And so that was absolutely wonderful. I think Emily Henry is one of those writers where, whether it's like on a rainy day and you're curled up on the sofa, or a sunny day and you're at the beach, or whatever kind of day it is, like, is a good day to read an Emily Henry book, I think. And then I'm like really late to this one, but I think I'm a believer that like books don't have an expiration date, right? Like they hit shelves, and that doesn't determine when you as a reader have to discover them. So one of the books, the series that I discovered over the last couple of months was Neil Schusterman's Scythe series. And I read the entire trilogy in a week. And
so good.
It's so good. It's so
good.
Amazing. I become very evangelistic about books that I love. And I think it's because I read a lot of books. I like a good many of them. I love very few. And so when I do love a book, I just like force it upon everyone in my life. And the Scythe books, maybe one of the best series I've ever read.
Reading a lot of graphic novels recently, and one it was from the author Kelly Fernandez. I believe this is her first graphic novel for children. It's called Manu, and it's a very interesting graphic novel. It's about these two girls that attend this private school for witches in the Dominican Republic, but then one of the girls ends up dealing with the situation of dark magic. So it's all about her growing into herself, like finding herself, and also dealing with this inner demon, which becomes a physical demon, and how like the other kids in the school like deal with the situation in that way, and how they help her and her relationship with the students. And I thought it was great.
Ooh, that sounds so good. Have you read Squad yet? by Maggie Takuda Hall and Lisa Searle, which is about, it's like a queer girl gang of werewolves at a high school that eats like boys that prey on girls.
I saw that, but I have not read it yet.
Delightful. Absolutely delightful. Very, very, very satisfying.
Thank you so much for being on our podcast today. It was such a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm glad that we could make it work.
We are closing out our episode of Turn the Page today. And this is Megan.
And Jessica.
And Victoria Schwab.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.